This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
This is Michael Gineau with Insight to Israel, brought to you by America's Web Radio. And I want to thank all the guys at America's Web Radio for bringing the truth of the Jewish state to the grassroots of the United States. The truth about Israel, as it leads the way in technology, agriculture, and medicine. Number one in the world. David, you're back. David, you're back with us. It's good to have you back, brother.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
David was on last week's show, and I'll tell you, man, we can cover a lot. We can cover a lot. But we're going to get to that. It's amazing, amazing, amazing what the Jewish people have done in 66 years. And this truth that America's Web Radio brings, that Insight to Israel brings to Americans, is not temporal, but eternal. Because when this land was barren, pre-1948, in spite of, not completely, because the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth Aliyah, when Jews started to come home in the 1800s, and there's always been a Jewish presence, there was not that blessing of the bronze and the brains and the blood of the Jewish people that was shed and put out there to make this country what it is today. That full blessing of Jewish presence, which hadn't been seen in 2,000 years. So thank you to the guys at America's Web Radio. You guys are the best. David, do you know these guys pretty much do this radio show for free?
I didn't know that.
They came to me in March of 2013. They saw what I was posting on Facebook. And they said, Michael, we want to know what is happening. We stand with Israel. But we need to show Americans why we need to stand with Israel. And to a greater degree than what we do. Because we know... again, this is Michael Gineau on Insight to Israel saying, we got a corrupt to the core, godless, cesspool, filthy, dirty, rotten, and I'm going to say it's satanic government running right now, full of Muslims that have infiltrated every level. And it's because of also our choice of leadership, because we have become, not everybody, and you know who you are. Not everybody is corrupt. There is a remnant. As you said in the last week's show, there is, God always has a remnant. But we have failed as a people to take that bold stand, because in love. But sometimes people think, when we think of love, we've become so shallow as a society that love is all gushy-mushy. You know, we have to be nice to everyone and pat them on the back. But love is righteous indignation, principled, channeled to stand against wickedness. And because we've failed to do that in many areas, that's why we've allowed wickedness, cultural corruption, which now has put leadership in. And Solomon said, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And because we've forgotten that, we see now why we have the politicians that we do. Not to get off, with all that being said, thank you to the guys at America's Web Radio. They said, we want to know the truth. We'll give you that show. You come up with the name, the logo, and the guests, and we'll air it twice on Sunday and once during the week.
And thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, those guys, God bless them. God bless them. They could be making money. And I'm doing my best to sell Insight to Israel, America's Web Radio coffee mugs. So if you want one, email me. But David, we had a great show last week. And there, if folks that are listening reflect back on what has happened in history and in the world with Russia and China and the EU and all of these things that have taken place just in the past week, we will see that we are in some very serious times. And last week you gave us some very... You gave us some meat, brother. Look, there's some folks... I don't care whether you eat... What kind of meat you eat, it was meat. And I'm astonished at what you know as a man, as 3 years my junior, that it's it seems to be as much and even more so than I know. So it puts me to the test to enlarge my knowledge of the Scripture. I want to start off by asking you, and there's a lot of things we covered, but there are some things I do want to cover in this first segment. Why, David? Why did your life take this course, and did you ever realize, obviously we can never realize how we got to where we are today only by looking back, but when did you feel this calling, or how did it happen? Was it a Samuel moment?
No, it wasn't a Samuel moment. The call to do Jewish-Christian relations, right now I do it in the portfolio of as an executive director for the Center for Jewish-Christian Understanding and Cooperation in Efrat under the auspices of Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. But when I started that 14 years ago, okay, was at the Israeli Consul in New York. I was an American working for the consulate. I was hired because I worked in the Giuliani administration era.
Oh, nice.
Working for two New York City council members. And I knew the political world, and the consul needed to understand Campaign 2000, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut.
Wow.
Again, for those people who are new, I'm a fifth generation New Yorker, so pretty much, and now 9 years living in Israel. But when I was in New York and working for the Israeli consulate, I was an American working for them and trying to help them understand the political landscape of what was going to happen in 2000 and advise the consul general appropriately. And in addition, the deputy consul general spoke Spanish. And I was creating Latino affairs contacts because we felt that we knew that the Latino influence in the United States was going to be very instrumental in the political landscape. We wanted to build up those relationships then. And I knew the people. So I treated the deputy consul general as he was running for office and just going into neighborhoods that most diplomats would never go into. And this is before, you know, Harlem was, you know, what it is today.
Right.
It was just a different, you know, and I brought into Spanish Harlem and Bedford Stuyvesant and all the places that, you know, has these type of negative images in the Hollywood movies. But I brought him there because relationships are important to develop for me, for the helping of the State of Israel. And when the second Intifada broke out...
Now, do me a favor. Explain to the listeners that are... What
the Intifada is. Yeah. So if people recall, Clinton was trying to get some type of Mideast deal back in 99 and 2000. And actually, everyone was at the table. Ehud Barak was basically going to give 97% of the land needed to get the peace deal off. And Arafat walked away, and there was an orchestrated event that caused an uprising more lethal than it was in the late 80s when the first Palestinian uprising took place. Right. To go ahead and go against the Israeli government, what they would say preconceived as the end of the occupation, and get their way through terrorism then at the negotiating table. Over 3% of the land.
Wow.
Like they couldn't deal with the
3%.
So I'm coming in during that transitional time, UN Millennium Summit, right before the whole Intifada breaks out. And what happens is Israel is basically going up in smoke. Terrorism is happening, bus bombings, restaurant bombings. I was writing the obituaries on the Israeli side for Israel Live, which was the daily publication for Israel, for the foreign ministry.
Wow.
And it was a very tough time. And we had my boss, the deputy consul general, get on Telemundo television. And a Brooklyn pastor from Bay Ridge Christian Center gets a calling from God when he sees my pastor and says, I need to do an Israel celebratory event for Israel. Invites my boss.
Wow.
This is right around the beginning of 2001. And at the last moment, right before the Sabbath was going to begin, my boss calls me up, says, I can't go. Can you please go instead of me?
Wow.
Now, I grew up in a very religious world environment where basically going into a church was a violation of idol worship.
Yeah.
Here's the other voice saying, my job is very important. My religious upbringing is the other voice. What am I going to do? I value my job. And I say, yes, I'll do it. And then I call up my my pulpit rabbi, Rabbi Dr. Gerald Meister, and I said, can I go? He says, yeah, you're like in the Israeli army. They give you a command, no questions asked. And I said, Rabbi, thank you very much for the dispensation. I'll be going to church for the very first time in my entire life.
What was that like for you?
That was very, it was, I was, again, I'm, all I knew about the church, first of all, was everything was Catholic. I didn't know anything
Oh, was
else.
It a Catholic church?
No.
It was a, okay.
That's all I knew.
Right.
Again, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
And I grew up on the border between Borough Park and Bensonhurst, which is the Italian neighborhood.
Right.
And most of the Italians are Catholics where we're from, in New York. And therefore, it was like, okay, I'm going to think in the Hollywood, iconic imagery, stained glass windows, Jesus on the cross. I'm thinking organs and all that. And I walk in and it's like, okay, this is a huge building. Israeli flags being waved. Israeli songs are being sung.
Wow.
Jesus is not on the cross.
Yeah, we...
I didn't... And I'm like, in my mind, and I was so naive, I was like, maybe he fell off maintenance on Monday, we'll put him back on. I didn't know. Like, I didn't understand why he wasn't. And it was very weird. And then, I really don't know what I said that Friday evening. But Monday morning came along, and the Consul General just basically said, you're in charge of Christian affairs.
Wow.
And I didn't accept right away.
Okay.
I always say, in Jewish ease, I needed to think about it. In Christian ease, I needed to pray about it.
Right.
And I go,
brother, that was good. That was awesome.
And I go back to my rabbi, and I ask,
wow.
I said, what do you think? And he said, and then he reveals to me he was involved in Jewish-Christian relations for 25 years. I never knew that about him. He tells me, you have a sacred responsibility in front of you. You can do this from a media perspective. Line yourself with the moral majority. Get your picture in the paper. Get Israel's story in. And you fulfill the media criteria for the foreign ministry.
And that's it.
And that's fine. You've done that.
Right.
Or you do this from covenant.
Yeah. Wow.
Jews and Christians believe they're covenant communities. We both believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We have a common scripture that we believe that is divine. We are agents of God here on earth to bring his kingdom here on earth. And we all want the world to know who the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is. You work through that without any objective whatsoever. Allow it to take you wherever it goes. Listen to that inner voice of God in you and just go with it.
Wow.
I prefer you do the latter than the former. And I had no clue what he was talking about.
Now, let me...
No clue.
I want to interrupt you just for a second, because I want to clarify something. And maybe, I think of because a lot of Americans obviously don't get here. When they come for a few weeks. But I've been here for almost 2 years now. And I have to say, David, this is the most amazing people. My life has been turned inside out. Israelis, I had this one girl that's a friend of mine, she said, you live in an a world of ideology and not in reality, because she's an attorney and she deals with like bankruptcy and people who just renege and do the wrong thing with their credit and they don't care, and the bad people, you know? She goes, Michael, I have to deal with these people, so it's kind of made her a little bitter. And you always have those people no matter where you are in the world. But my experience has been, and maybe it's because I seek these kind of people out and God puts them in my life, but I have experienced the most amazing people, David. It has changed me and blessed me, and I have a little softa, a grandma, she has her daughter every Saturday night when Shabbat is over, bring me enough soup and cakes and pasta for an entire week. Without fail. And so there are people, my point is now, I don't want to get off track, but there are some Israelis that have come and said, oh, you Christians want all the Jews to come back because you think it'll usher in the Messiah. I'm like, first of all, God does what he wants in his time, and it ain't none of our business. But he gives us an indication through his word and through the signs of the times where we're at. And through the Jewish calendar, that's his timetable. So, you know, my retort to that is you know what? Either this country was born out of prophecy in Isaiah where God said he would bring you from the four winds of the earth, or it wasn't. You can't have it both ways. So what would you say to that? I don't want to get off track and off focus, but what would you say to those people who come up with that conclusion of Christians that say this is the best place for Jews to be and the safest place, which is certainly logical, but how would you, I'm sure you've heard that before.
I think it's an obligation of every Jew to come to Israel and live here. I moved here because
you felt that call.
You feel the call, but now you want to be part of history.
Right.
What greater pleasure is it to be part of a historical movement?
Right.
I am actually more jealous of the generation that came here in the 1800s and went to Zichron Yaakov. And planted here, and my wife says I always was born in the wrong era.
Mm-hmm.
And I look, and I can sit in Zichron Yaakov right now and know that these people that came over before me created this, you know, helped create this Israel as divine agents of God. Very important. We always have to understand that everything is God, but God has His agents to make things happen, even whether they're observant or not observant.
That's a good point.
It's very important. Agents happen. We don't understand why this person was picked, but he had a role to be played in this whole thing. Every single person in Israel is making the continuing miracle of Israel happen. Just by being here is actually continuing this miracle.
And I'm glad you said that. Observant and non-observant, because many times I run into, especially in Tel Aviv, where people don't know their history so much. They really don't. It's sad. But they say, but this country was in 48, it was by, you have the some of these folks, they weren't so religious.
Most of them were not.
Communists. Many came with communist socialists.
Some came with communist tendencies.
And that's what people that aren't God-centered in their life, that look at history and they focus on that.
Right, but the kibbutz movement is based upon a communist model.
Right.
Right, and the kibbutz movement helped shape Israel during its formative years.
Right.
So, you know...
But that doesn't make...
Anything wrong. I think it's part of...
And it doesn't mean communism is right, but it served a purpose.
It served a purpose to help the formative years of Israel. And to me, again, the most liberal, most non-observant, whatever he's eating, it doesn't matter. But he served in the Israeli army. He helped helped to protect this country.
Right.
God has used him, and he has his own faith journey to take with God.
Right.
But he helped to maintain and protect this country. And more respect has to be given to him than some people who have gone ahead and shunned this entire miracle completely, who actually live here. Mm. I'd rather go ahead and have coffee with the one who's non-observant than go in the house of someone who goes ahead and just has a total veil over their eyes in regard to this miracle that we're living into today.
Wow, that's very powerful, David. Very powerful. So, getting back to you, getting this job.
Getting this portfolio and the thing I never thought I would. I would never get an alumni award for the work I'm doing right now. But that pivotal moment where...
When you were offered the
where
position.
Where we're offered the position and my rabbi said I should do this from a faith component. And not knowing what that meant, and not understanding the terminology. But I said, okay. There again, that inner voice said, do it. Without understanding what I needed to do. But I went back to my boss and I said this, I'll do on three conditions. One, I need to learn about Christianity. Number two, we had to do this from faith. Number three, I need my rabbi aboard. And literally, he turns around and he says, no problem. This is a consul general, Alon Pincus, who wasn't observant, but had a respect for religion.
Right.
And he trusted me. And basically said, you can do this on the condition that you write a white paper on every single denomination in Christianity, their political and theological stance on Israel.
Wow.
But that, wow, again, I thought you were all Catholic. I didn't realize there are 30,000 different movements in Christianity.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the complicated movements within the Protestant world.
Okay, well, let me clarify something by saying this. Because when I first came here, you know, there's a lot I just could never fathom until I came here. But, you know, I heard someone for the first time say, when you have a decision to be made, how's it go? When you have a decision to be made or a thought that there are 60 different, among the Jewish people, there, how's that go? There are like 60 different
opinions.
Two
Jews, three opinions.
Two Jews, three opinions. And that's the same in Christianity. We'll take a little nugget of truth and we'll dissect it into 10 different ways, and it's almost mind-boggling. And it's anyway, so
right, so the question is how you take all this, you know, all this history explained to Israelis that have no clue about Christianity. So it was a task. I didn't understand all the movements. This is how naive I was back then, 14 years ago, without understanding.
And how old were you at that time when you got?
Well, I'm 40 now, so I was 26 back then.
Okay, wow, such a young man.
Taking this portfolio, yeah, this task. It's definitely a sacred calling. And trying to come up with a strategy. I mean, back then, the only thing I knew about evangelicals was Foursquare, Calvary Chapel, and Assemblies of God.
Yeah, that's where I grew up, Assemblies of God.
And that was it. Because everything else, I just didn't understand. And again, going back to how naive I was, I said, oh, I have the great solution for the Protestant world. You need a pope. One person will dictate everything. And my thing is over. Maybe I should be finding a pope for the Protestant world. But then, you know, that sort of goes counter the whole Reformation movement.
Right, exactly.
But that's how naive I was. Yeah. But I want to fast forward. 14 years later, here I am at Oral Roberts University.
Wow.
As the first Orthodox Jew to be accepted in a spirit-filled university to take a Christian...
You're the first.
I'm the first to take a Christian master's in theology.
Wow.
In a spirit-filled university. I'm not talking about mainline, you know, type
right.
of stuff. So I'm doing it because I want to advance something in Jewish Christian dialogue. My thesis will be on the Hebraic roots of the Holy Spirit, which has never been as a dialogue piece between Jews and Christians. You know, many people ask me, so what you're writing about? I'm saying this will have to be left to the Holy Spirit and figure out where this all leads us. I don't know yet. But I have to give credit to Oral Roberts University for taking a Jew. I don't believe in the way Christians believe.
Okay.
I'm an Orthodox Jew.
Right.
I don't believe Jesus is divine and Savior. But I think the testament to where Jewish-Christian relations is today is huge for a spirit-filled university to accept me for who I am and allow me to develop my skills in order to bridge Jews and Christians to speak with one another on a more positive level.
Wow.
So not knowing anything 14 years ago, and growing up with a very negative understanding of Christianity, what you equate the cross with salvation, I saw the cross as Auschwitz, as most Jews do. Because when people went into Auschwitz, they saw a cross.
Right, you're right.
The SS officers wore a cross on the belt buckle.
You're right.
You know, they prayed on Sunday and burnt Jews on Monday.
It's disgusting.
So our historical understanding of Christianity is so negative. And the Jewish law response to it has been completely in the negative. So doing what I'm doing right now is unprecedented.
Yeah, it is.
It's always walking a fine line, because I am a Jew. I want to maintain my theological boundaries.
Right.
I always say to Christians, you believe in Jesus, divine and Savior. I want you to be good Christians. I'm not going to make an altar calling to make you an Orthodox Jew in any way. I want you to respect who I am.
Right.
And communicate with me covenantally. Don't treat me as someone outside of the covenant.
Right.
If you really believe you're crafted into this covenant through Romans 9 through 11,
wow,
don't treat me as someone who's outside of that. Respect
Absolutely.
Me. Respect that mystery.
Wow. Wow. Wow, what do you say to that, man? I don't know how to deal with that. Yeah, because what you, I'm sure that you probably even know more of the. I'm sitting here looking at you, and we had this conversation off the air. How did you refer to what we would call the New Testament?
The apostolic teachings.
Okay. When you apostolic teaching. It's not a new word.
It's, it's a word that we found in, that works in Jewish Christian relational.
That's a perfect way of putting it.
Because again, I think I'm just as hip as you are.
Right.
And therefore, saying you're new, already makes this connotation that we're all fossilized religion.
Right.
Well, if we're going to have a conversation,
right,
then I'm not fossilized.
Right. Wow. That's
I'm a living, breathing expression of the covenantal faith. It's not the same expression that Christianity has, but I'm valid just as you are.
And you know,
but at the same time, also see that Christianity is salvific for Christians.
Right.
Depending which denomination you're from, I'll either be sipping martinis with you or grape juice.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No. That's correct. You're absolutely correct. Wow. You know, David, I'll tell you, because especially in the United States, we have lost so much that even the original early church, starting with the apostles, had established when it came to church doctrine. We've come so far. It boggles my mind because there are things. Look, I didn't ever explore the idea that Christmas was pagan. Now, you said that to some folks in the States, my goodness, you'd be crucified. And there's no exaggeration in that. When you say that Easter is pagan. And if you can't see it for what it is, well, then you just don't know the Bible that well, let alone church history. But you are feeding us some information today that's not talked about in many Christian circles. You're putting things in terms that are, as someone who's not a Christian, but part of the covenant, in terms that most folks, you're going to be some folks listening to the show that scratch their head and say, what am I missing?
Right.
But it should cause them to explore.
Correct. I'm not here to rattle someone's theology. I'm here to rattle their approach to the Jewish people and the state of Israel, because a lot of times you can see a miracle in front of you but then not acknowledge that miracle.
Right.
You can still be in your 9-to-5 living and totally look at Israel as some type of UN political creation.
Right.
And that is so not it.
Right.
The op-eds of the New York Times do not dictate what the state of Israel is.
Absolutely.
Or how it came about.
Absolutely.
The UN was just the vehicle to make it happen.
Right.
But if the UN thinks that it could take it away, then they're becoming their own gods.
Right.
And not acknowledging the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Absolutely.
They should be thankful that they were part of the process and leave us alone and start looking at the real issues.
Right.
That are at hand in the global world. The world's problems are not because of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Absolutely.
Even if it was solved tomorrow, there are still problems around Israel's borders that doesn't take that away.
Right.
Okay? So this is some type... there is something over the world right now that is... You call a satanic force.
Satanic. Veil of wickedness.
Veil of wickedness of some sort. But there is something out there that is preventing people from seeing it. And all I can do is pray.
Right.
That there's a transformation in their life. I don't want the Iranian president to ever be killed. I just want him to have a transformation in his life to acknowledge the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, like Jonah did when he went to Iran a couple thousand years ago. And he went ahead and made that call to repent. They should come and repent and acknowledge who God is.
Brother, that's some... You just laid the peanut butter on thick, man.
That's it.
Hey, we need some milk to wash that down, because someone's going to have it all in the roof of their mouth. I feel like I'm listening to a Pentecostal preacher right now. Except you're just a little more calmer than some of them. Listen, wow. Okay, so we're going to be right back. And David... this is probably going to end up. You're going to be. I want to make you a regular.
I appreciate it.
We need it. We need to hear some truth coming out of this country from God. guys like you. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel. We'll be right back. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gonneau. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
You want to talk about a buffet of truth, you're getting it. You're getting it. And we are in Netanya. It's a beautiful day today, David.
It's a great day.
I always say in the morning when I wake up, just about every morning, I post on Facebook, another beautiful day in the Jewish state. And it is. David, even when it's raining or when it's snowing, my perspective is that I am seeing what Moses could not.
And also feeling physically the blessing, because rain here is a blessing.
Yes. And this is an amazing country. You know, what, and I want to encourage, if there's any American Jews that are listening, you can come here and vacation, come and send your kids for a week or two and feel good about yourself, but you are missing out on being with your people in the prosperity and blessing. It's a tough country. This is not for cowards. This is not for folks who just want to, what's the term? I've heard some preachers use the term soft shoe, for soft shoe walking. If you want to, David, when I got off the plane and I gave everything away in the States, my brother thought I was nuts. You should be saving for retirement, Michael. You're 40-some years old. I'm like, really? If I'm dependent on the U.S. government to give me Social Security, which is broke, and most of my retirement was lost in 2008, what little I had, I'm not going to be, life is not going to be good for me if that's what I'm counting on. Because there's not going to be any hope at the end. And when I came here, and I questioned myself in 2012 through this whole entire summer, I'm like, my emotions were ebbs and flows, you know, ups and downs. And wow, someone's dragging the ram.
I pause.
We got a car about to get towed. So when I there were times I struggled. But I'll tell you, the greatest thing, and when my mother and I were at the airport in Philadelphia, I will tell you that the hardest thing I ever did, the deepest severing of emotions in my heart, was when my father passed away, and when I stood there at the doorway of the Philadelphia airport, and we're both crying like babies, and that knife was cutting my heart when my mother said, Michael, she was crying, tears running down her face. Because I knew, because I told her 3 months earlier, I said, Mom, you may never see your son again. You need to prepare for that. And she came to me a month before I left and said, Michael, I give you to God. But then at the airport, she's saying, Michael, do you have to go? Her chin quivering, tears running down her face, and I'm doing the same thing. I said, Mom, I have to. And then I get in Ben-Gurion Airport. Actually, I'm walking in Philadelphia. I'm like, all right, now it's time to be a man. I land in the airport in Ben-Gurion, two bags to my life. And I said, all right, Michael, we're going to see how much of a man you really think you are. So if you think that you're really that big and strong as a person, you come to this country, and especially as a Jew, leaving the greatness, so-called, as we have found ourselves in a cultural decline, you leave the greatness of the United States of America, and you come to a land that was cut out by the feet of Abraham, led by the hand of God. We'll see what you're made of as a person. And it will make you a better person if you trust in Him. If you commit your soul to the Almighty and His leading, it will make you what you never thought you were before, and what you thought, it will take away what you thought you were before coming here. And I'm sure that as someone that's Jewish, you can attest to something far greater than I could ever. What was it like for you when you first came, David? Your first experience in Israel. We're going to get back, but I think this is important for you as a Jew.
I had to make a decision for my kids. I had two sons born in the United States, in Brooklyn, New York, and it came to a point where I have to go ahead and make a decision. Where do my kids should grow up? New York is unaffordable. Do I go somewhere in the United States where there's a Jewish community and try it there? Or do I go to Israel? Now, it does help to have an Israeli wife, but the Israeli wife enjoyed the fruits of the United States. It's not easy, you know, for her living a certain amount of years in the United States,
right,
and knowing they got to come back and not knowing what the future is going to be. But the deciding factor for me was, do I want my kids to grow up defending their Judaism in the diaspora? Or Judaism is part of who they are without feeling the need to defend it.
Wow.
And that was the decision for me. And I said to my wife, I think we need to go to Israel and try it, because it will be the best thing for the kids.
Right.
Because in Judaism, everything is about the next generation.
Right. Wow.
God chooses Abraham because He knows that He will tell the next generation of Him.
Right.
The Shema is about speaking about these things that God has done to the next generation. And always Judaism went against the cultural milieu of its day, where it was okay to kill kids. Right? Abraham.
Right.
Abraham grew up in a culture you can do molech.
Yeah.
I take my kid. If the gods are not satisfied, I'll give my kid over. Maybe the gods will be appeased. And Judaism is the opposite. It's all about, no, don't touch your kid ever. Ever. If anything, give him what God is all about.
Yeah.
Where's the best place to do that?
In Israel.
In Israel.
You know, David, I tried to feel in the spring of 2012, I found myself driving to New York City. I wanted to feel it. I started to feel that tug. You know, and when I say this, when I've shared with my friends here, they said, maybe you're really Jewish deep down inside, you know? And I know that I'm not. I don't have any kind of Jewish background, or no one in my family. But I started to feel that real tug, and I thought, well, maybe I'll get a glimpse of Israel in New York City, where there's so many Jews. And I went there, and David, I didn't feel it. I saw a group of people that were playing out, acting out Judaism, but they're really not, David. They're really not fulfilling God's promise to the Jewish people by not being here. It breaks my heart, because they designed and developed this, not just a comfort zone where that faith is not being fulfilled like Abraham did it, because they're in a realm where, again, like you said, they have to defend that, where they can't freely practice it, and they're in this place of even persecution on many levels. When if they would just transform and transplant that community to Israel, there would be that fulfillment. They would feel like a flower blooming. The seed's been planted, but they would feel that bloom of that garden from God here in the Jewish state. It's beautiful. And what they fail to realize is, while they live in a society around them that is becoming more and more heathenistic, because that's what it is. And I say that about my own country that I was born and raised in, I'm thankful for. But we are following down that path. But they can come to a place, David, where you have something so special here, where children can walk down the street unaccompanied by adults, grammar school children, and play and have that freedom fulfilled in their everyday life, where you don't worry about. Look, again, I don't want people to misunderstand. This is not a perfect society, but in its own right, there's an innocence here that has not been touched yet fully by an outside world of corruption, of ungodliness, where little children can walk down the street. The most amazing thing I've ever seen, David, when they can walk down the street and play and laugh and sing like I knew was my childhood growing up, in security and safety, and even in high school, travel the country to camp in the Negev, or go up to the north in the Golan Heights and enjoy times with their friends. It's amazing for me to see. Could you? I want to get your take on that.
So I would say, of course, being here in Israel is the actual greatest expression of fulfillment of Judaism, because synagogue and state is part of who we are as a country. There's no separation of synagogue and state,
right,
like you have in the United States, separation of church and state.
Which is a leftist made-up mindset.
Okay. But for us, I can use my tax dollars and send my kid to a religious institution that is part of my value system.
Wow.
Where, that debate in the United States of school vouchers is still there. There's no debate here. You can be a secular person, send your kid to a secular place in Israel, or you can be a religious person and send your kid to a religious institution, and I don't have to spend $30,000 a year or $20,000 a year
on a public school system.
On a private school,
right,
private school education, so you get the values of what you want to give over to your kids if you're not putting them in a public school setting. Here, you don't have to worry about that.
Wow.
My tax dollars are part of the process of growing up my children within a value system that I want my kids to be part of.
Yeah.
And be still respectful of people who don't adhere to that.
Right.
And they have their own school education as well. I think it's beautiful to go ahead and have that type of freedom where my kids can go and live out their faith. And again, they don't have to defend it.
Right.
They don't have to go out and say, okay, so how am I going to live Jewishly today? They are living Jewishly by being here.
Right, right. It's very interesting, David, that our founding principles came from Torah.
Yeah.
And we adhered to that, to those Judeo-Christian principles for many generations, until around the late 1800s, and then we got away from that and got into a more secular society, and now we do have that argument. I want to send my kids to a Christian school or even a yeshiva, to a Jewish school, and I don't want my tax dollars. I want to be able to have that liberty to choose, and
that the tax dollars will cover that tuition for that school, and you don't have to send your kid to public school. And this is probably one of the only things that bring Jewish and Christian communities together is the religious community of the Jewish world,
right,
and the religious community of the Christian world, who want to grow up their kids in a certain way, believe in that concept that tax dollars should be utilized for that. But the problem is you face a separation of church and state,
right,
and that makes and complicates things.
Yeah. Well, and
thank
that's
God
the thing.
I don't have that now.
That's the thing. Again, we can learn from Israel, and this is where we're getting back to your job, which is
creating positive communication between Jews and Christians by going ahead and the way we do it at the center is learning the Bible together. Christian groups visiting Israel have an opportunity to learn the Bible with Jewish educators and rabbis, and we try and through the Bible study understand each other's mindset and then create the fellowship. So when the person returns back to Israel, they've been transformed and actually gone ahead and spoken with some Jews. You know this as well as I do. Most Christian tourism packages is a template walk in the steps of Jesus tour, where the only time a Christian will interface with a Jew
is when they're here.
When they order a falafel.
No, you're right.
They don't interface with a Jew on any level besides ordering food.
Right.
And they only even engage what the modern miracles of Israel has done for the world. It's sad. It's a very sad commentary of the tourism here to Israel. So what we've done is we've gotten into a certain, use a business term, market niche, where we can take groups that are willing to do this. Not everyone's willing to do this.
Right.
And interface with us and build a relationship.
Wow. Wow.
So we feel that, you know, some people go ahead and try to bring pastors over from different parts of the world to understand Israel, but there's already a market here in Israel. They're already coming.
Right.
And we're interfacing with them now.
Wow.
So that when they go back, they have a better understanding of who we are as a people.
Right. Wow. Now, let me ask you, on both sides of the aisle, have you gotten any flack?
Sure. Since our inception in 2008 as the first Orthodox Jewish center to do this, both from the Christian side and from the Jewish side, have really made our lives a PR nightmare. Because what we're doing is unprecedented.
Yeah,
there's a lot of prejudices from the Jewish side because of the historical baggage of the church against the synagogue, and also suspicion about why indeed Christians supporting Israel, is this all an attempt to convert? Now, there are certain Christians that are out there to take that, what they believe in, of trying to witness and convert right now.
Right.
I think it's okay for Christians to believe that one day, at the end of days, somehow your most perfect revelation that you believe in as a Christian, you believe that I will be who you are.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm very comfortable with my Judaism and saying, you'll be an Orthodox Jew when Messiah comes.
I've heard, my friends, you know,
this is not about first time, second time.
Absolutely.
I'm not, what is it that I believe in? I believe in the most perfect revelation. Now, I'm not going to say that you must convert to Judaism.
Right.
No. But I do believe that Judaism is the most perfect revelation for me.
Right.
You believe your brand of Christianity is the most perfect revelation for you. And you would want nobody, you would want people to believe what you do. I also want people to believe in what I believe
right.
in.
Right.
Okay? I'm coming as an equal partner in my revelation to
yeah.
you. Now, I'm not here to convert you. I want to work with you. I am willing to leave the mystery aside for right now in
right.
order to work with you.
Yeah. Wow. Let's see. This is segment number 4, and I can only say, golly gee willikers. So, moving forward with that, what did your wife think?
It's not been easy for my wife.
Because
it hasn't been easy.
Let me give you my perspective, because she was born here and raised here, and it's a different mindset when you're not Americanized. And because the Yemen are very, very traditional, very religious, and I've spent a lot of time with Yemen families, and in Rosh Ain. And I sat across from this. I love the older folks because they've seen a lot more. They've experienced, obviously. And I can learn so much from them. And I sat across the table from this Yemen father who's like in his 60s. And this guy, when we're talking about Torah and the prophets, he's rubbing his face saying and laughing, saying, you have to be Jewish. You have to be Jewish. I'm like, no, I'm not Jewish. He's like, you have to be. How do you know so much? And so the great thing about what you're doing is that you are enlightening even Jews here that are born and raised, and with that stigma, that
the relationship is okay to explore.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have your brain rattled a little bit.
Yeah.
Because in order to create a path of reconciliation, you're going to have to leave your prejudices at the door. And it's not easy.
No,
and
it's not.
And it shouldn't be easy.
Right.
Okay, otherwise this could have been done a long time ago. There's so much at stake, because if we can get us working well, both Judaism and Christianity working together as a model for the rest of the world,
right?
They said, wow, the synagogue and the church are working together, and all that history was there, and they're still able to do it. That's a positive witnessing.
Right.
Then indeed there is a God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the world. If they can get it together, then I should be able to do it as well.
You know what, David? The reality is, regardless of my perspective, is the world's getting more wicked. And we are seeing a Christian cleansing right now in Africa. It's happened in the Middle East. Jews, most Jews, they no longer linger in places like Yemen, or Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and now they're getting rid of the Christians in a lot of those countries, and they're very persecuted. And the reality is, historically proven, that even though there are those that carried the name of Christianity that persecuted the Jews, they were not Christian by any means. I say that emphatically. Even if there's, I don't know how many Jews listen to my radio program. Hopefully it's a lot. And we need them to. And especially the ones in the United States to see the greatness of this country and what's happening. But at the end of the day, let's forget about the past temporarily. But focus on now, because there is a persecution coming to, Islam says, the Jew on Saturday, the Christian on Sunday. And if we don't stick together, we are reality, no matter what our doctrinal difference, which doesn't seem to be as great as what we think it is many times, they're coming for us, brother.
Right, but I don't want the relationship to be based upon a common enemy. Relationship is valid in and of itself.
Right, I agree.
There are problems externally that face both of us.
Right.
And I think this is very hard. I'll say this again. I said some radical statements beforehand.
You have said.
I am totally bewildered that there's so much Christian persecution on the Western Church's watch, and they just stand there and they think, if I just pray, everything will be fine. Prayer is important, but action is needed. And I don't understand why there's not a massive movement to help out the Christians who are being persecuted in Middle Eastern countries. This will never happen, especially now, on a Jewish watch for Jews.
Right.
Look what just happened in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Right? We're bringing Jews over.
30,000
Jews. And we just brought over, I think, about 2,000 Jews from Ukraine, with the help of Christians, by the way, in order to do that with the Jewish agency. But we're proactive to ensure that whatever is happening, we're fast-tracking that, will give them options to get out.
Right.
Right?
Right.
We know what it means.
Right.
When we don't have a Jewish state and we don't have organizations in place that we can help our own people. And Jews are asking Christians now, this is very interesting, it just happened with the World Jewish Congress at the Feast of Tabernacles this past year, and saying, we want to help you guys out, but we have no direction from you Christians to tell us what we need to do. I don't know what we need to do.
You know what the problem is, David?
I don't know what the problem
is. I will tell you what it is. There is there is a veil of blindness because Christians are not receiving right teaching. We came to that conclusion in the last week's show. And there's lack of prayer, and when there's lack of prayer, there's lack of God leading people, opening them up to the Scriptures, their heart and mind, and having a clear understanding of why we need to not just stand with the Jewish people, but also stand with our Christian brethren overseas. You know, David, this is...
But where's the action? My question, where's the action? The prayer is important, and we pray, and it's very important. I don't want to undermine that.
Right.
But just like your book of James says, acts is an affirmation of faith. At the end of the day, when I'm supposed to love God, it's hard to command an emotion. Love for us comes from the word have, to give. Inherent in love is to give, is an act. There is persecution happening. Action needs to be done in guidance with prayer, but action needs to be done. And I don't see a massive movement of the Western Church, and especially in the United States specifically. Where's your Christian agency?
Right. You know what, Dave? Let me say this. I actually had this conversation with my mother the other night. Because she tells me sometimes, Michael, you're a little harsh on Facebook. If more people stood up against the Nazis, and look, it's a fine line, because we don't live in the day that we used to. But look at the Founding Fathers. Look at Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I'm sure you know who he is. He was a co-conspirator in the assassination attempts
to get Hitler off the
face of the earth. And because we've become so soft in the United States, and we have no real leadership, you know what I say? This is me speaking. You want to help the Christians in Africa? brother, you load up some men who think they're men, and you go to Africa, and you take up arms, and you go in and rescue those people. And we find it so appalling to think, oh, fight against Muslims? That doesn't make sense in a Western world, and maybe that you may not agree with that, but my God, to save these people from peril, we need to go in there by force, where the world is ignoring it intentionally, because we don't want to offend Muslims. We don't want to offend them. Go in there and you fight for those people, and you drag them out and rescue them on your back. You know?
I would say, okay,
that's my version.
I understand, but that's you would need some type of nation to allow something to that to happen.
Right, that's a whole other ballgame.
But I'm like, until something happens, whether the United States government takes any action to help out the Christians in other countries, that doesn't take away from the responsibility to allowing Christians to have another option to get out of that country temporarily till the situation subsides, and giving them another option to live somewhere else in order to practice their faith and freedom.
Right. I agree. And look, the reality is opposite of that, because we're bringing Muslims in from other countries under, and I don't want to get into the weeds here, but under George Bush, after 9/11, the number of Muslim student visas went up over 100%. And yet, at the same time, if you were a Christian or wanting to come here from Africa and study, you had to go through the root mill to get a visa to come here, to go to the United States.
You don't have to. It doesn't have to necessarily mean that the United States has to open up its border to allow everyone to come in. It could be work diplomatically with other relief agencies that are happening in Switzerland and stuff like that. If you're really into a social justice gospel, quote unquote,
right,
then the social justice gospel has to also dictate that your persecuted Christian brothers and sisters have an option to go ahead and leave the place that they are at, and give them an option to live and practice their faith and freedom.
What would you?
But that's the thing. For us in Judaism, this is perplexing to see something like this happen. That our Christians are dying every day.
Yeah.
On someone
every 17 minutes, there's three Christians that die.
And yet, where is your? Just like we have a Jewish agency, thank God we have a Jewish agency as part of the state of Israel that we can build up an infrastructure really quickly
and
rescue Jews.
It's amazing.
You guys have more people and more money than we do. Seriously, I know some mega churches have some massive money.
Yeah, they do.
We'll make the Jewish agency look like, you know, just a little, you know storefront.
Yeah.
And we just don't get it. And we want to be part of the solution. But the thing is, we know as Jews we might be actually advancing a problem because we are Jews.
Right.
You know, why is the Jews sticking their noses where they shouldn't stick? But to me, when I tell Christians, when you pray for Israel, you better be praying for your Christian brothers and sisters that are also living in here and also living in the Palestinian territories.
Right.
Your support should never, ever be taken away from your own brothers and sisters.
Right.
We as a center, we help out Palestinian Christians in Bethlehem to put food on the table.
Wow. And David, let me say this. I actually was talking to an Israeli soldier who works in intelligence, and it's almost like this kid didn't have a clue, and he works in intelligence about some things we were talking about when it comes to what's happening in Judea and Samaria, and otherwise known as the West Bank. And there was a Christian Arab that was listening to our conversation. And you know what this guy did? He chimed in. He said, listen, I've been listening. He turned to me and said, you're right. They are persecuting us.
In
Judea and Samaria.
In Palestinian territories. Because you have to define what Judea and Samaria is. Because Judea and Samaria both have Jewish and Palestinian communities.
Right.
So we have to be careful what we were talking about here.
Okay.
So in the Palestinian-controlled neighborhoods, the Christian voice is not empowered.
Right.
Status quo of allowing things to be what they are.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
There are a couple of Christian leaders there who are giving a voice to Christianity that they can practice their faith and not feel the repercussions. Obviously, this will be, needs another segment in and of itself. But when you're standing for Israel, please don't forget your Christian brothers living in the state of Israel itself, and especially the Palestinian territories, because because the Christian in Gaza is different than the Christian in Bethlehem,
right.
Different than the Christian in East Jerusalem, different than the Christian living in the north in the Galilee.
Yeah. David, thank you for being on the show again. We're going to start having you on, brother. This is good stuff. Tell us the website. We're going to post it on the page.
I appreciate it. It's www.cjcuc.com. www.cjcuc.com.
Great. This is Michael Gannot. David, thank you. Appreciate it, brother. This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Thank you for listening. God bless the Patriot Conservatives, the Christians that stand for truth in the United States. And God bless Israel in her fight for sovereignty and security.